This episode of Developing Courage is brought to you by Minds in Motion. If you and your family are struggling with the development of one or more children, find out about their four-quadrant program for kids K-12 at mimlearning.com.
Welcome back to Developing Courage. I'm Kara Vonderheide.
And I'm Lauren Thomas. Today in the studio, we have Melody Prinkleton. Melody has been a colleague of mine for several years in the early intervention program here. She works in the school systems full time, but today she is here to talk to us about pool therapy and how using the pool as a tool can be helpful for treatment with children that have some special needs.
I like how you rhymed that.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Tool with the pool.
Tool with the pool. Oh, yeah. I didn't even notice that I did that.
So this episode, which is number 29. Oh, no, it's 30. It's number 30.
Episode 30.
Yeah,
whoop,
it's going to be 30. How about us?
How about us?
Yeah. It's brought to you by our friends at Minds in Motion. And we would like to remind you that they have a special going on for us right now. If you use the word podcast when you call them, or you can go to our website and click through to theirs. From the little logo that's on the right side, you can get $100 off an assessment. So it's back to school time. If you get back this fall and figure out that your kid is having some troubles, give them a call and they can help.
Excellent.
So time for red light.
Green light.
I have a red light, green light update.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's back up a little bit because it's kind of new. So this is our segment where we give our green lights, which are get our developmental go-aheads from our therapeutic perspective. And we also talk about red lights.
Things that we're not so happy about that are
we're
out
not
there.
Very happy about those. So I have a red light coming up today, but first I have an update.
Okay.
Do you remember a couple episodes when you talked about when the child comes to you and you say, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, when you're
yes.
unloading the dishwasher?
Yes.
I tried to be better about that, and I think I am.
Oh.
Yeah. My 10-year-old comes to me the other night, and she says, Mommy, can we have special time? She wanted to run up to the neighborhood mall, and I thought, you know, I'm not a big mall person. She, it seems to be, but I'm not so much. So my first inclination, it had been a long day. I kind of had the sniffles. I was ready for my jammies, but I thought this girl isn't going to be asking very much longer
right.
to be hanging out with her mama. So I'm going to do it and I'm going to go. So we went.
Good.
And I owe that to you because that was another moment I could have said, just a minute.
Just a minute. Mom's really tired.
Not today. Right.
But good for you.
We went for it. So go ahead. What's your green light from this week?
So my green light is actually a website I've discovered that
ooh.
I think everyone needs to go to. It is fatbraintoys.com.
Okay.
And what I like about them is you can click on any of their products and they have a video that shows you children playing with the product. So you can kind of see it in action, but you can also search by diagnosis for your child and it gives you lists of toys that are appropriate to work for that diagnosis or by developmental milestone. So even for typically developing kids, you can look up a milestone.
Like I have an 8-month-old.
Right.
Okay.
And you can click on, I don't know, crawling or walking and or a fine motor skill.
And they give you a toy.
And they give you some toys and ideas.
That is a good tip.
Yes, it's a really neat interactive website and I'm pretty impressed by it.
Cool. Okay.
So check that out.
I will do that. Here's my red light.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Using video games and screens as a way to put a child to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Good one. Good one.
Okay, so I understand that there are exceptions to this rule. There are severe cases out there where parents might need to use such devices to put their child to sleep every once in a while. So I'm really talking about your average kid here, trying to wind down in their bedroom before sleep by playing video games, doing something on a screen. So here's my story. This kid that I have right now kept coming in for therapy, and he kept complaining of being so tired every day, and kind of all he can talk about is the video games. To his detriment, you know, he really didn't want to focus on anything else productive, just wanted to focus on the violence and the intensity of the video games. And this was a pretty young kid, 7. Yeah.
Okay.
Not a teenager or anything. So he proceeds to tell me that he has access to video games in his room and that when he can't sleep or once, you know, the parent has put him to bed and then they leave, he's proceeding to stay up all night long and play video games. And his grandmother kind of confirms this. So, you know, I'm going to recommend that you keep such activities, such screen activities as clearly recreational activities. Don't frame it as something that is a wind down activity. There are many, many other wind down activities that are much better than screen time. We all know this.
Absolutely.
You want to put certain boundaries around your week, I think, and say, you know, these are the okay times to play and zones in your house in which we play. And there are others that are kind of off limits. And I would recommend that a bedroom be one of those.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I think we need to train for habits, just like we as adults get in bad habits. You know, you give the kids free access before they have the responsibility to deal with it. And they're really going to run with that. So I give that a red light and I say, be the parent.
Absolutely. Be the parent.
It's okay to set those boundaries and to guide your child as far as the good time zones and places in your house to have such activities. And let your child sleep.
Yes. Sleep is the green light. Video games to go to sleep are the red light.
That's right.
Enjoy the show. Okay, so we have Melody Prinkleton in the studio today, and we're both really excited. Melody does pool therapy, which is why we have her here today. And I, like I said, I've known her for a while with just as colleagues, as both being PTs. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
We're all wearing blue, like water. Did you notice that?
Oh, and we're doing a pool therapy episode. That's
right. It's very soothing in here right now.
Yes.
In the studio.
Yes. So, Melody, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to go from graduating with a traditional PT degree to doing the pool therapy.
Okay. I've been a therapist for 15 years, and I guess I never really transitioned from land to water because I do both, and sometimes I use them at the same time with my students or with my clients. Sometimes I see them a bit on the land and then we transition to the water, or we'll start in the water and transition to land. So there's usually some land component with every aquatherapy patient that I have. I found that I had some patients who just had too much of a difficult time on land, and that they fought it, and it was very difficult to move on land. So we transitioned to the water, and it was amazing, the difference. I felt like they felt a little more freedom in the water. So over the past 15 years, I've kind of transitioned to spending a lot of time in the water.
It is quite amazing. I think now that everybody, you know, parents have video on their phone and things, and I'll see video when they go on vacation and they're at the pool, or sometimes they may be at pool therapy, but it's quite remarkable the freedom of movement that some of our kids will see in the water that you don't necessarily see right away outside of the water.
Right. The water just has so many different properties that help the children, and they help us. They help not only children but adults. There's so many things it makes it easy for them to move. I can share with you some of those.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Some of the things that really help that we don't think about because we move well would be the buoyancy of the water. And buoyancy is just like the upward pressure that the water, that energy that it gives to people who are standing up, or a body that's in the water that helps them stand up. That helps them feel supported. And the deeper you go in the water, the easier it is. So if you have a weak side or a flaccid limb, the water is helping that to stay up, and it gives them that support. So that's one of the many things that the water does. And then it has pressure. It's called hydrostatic pressure. And that is like a constant pressure that the whole body feels around. You and I may not ever notice the hydrostatic pressure, but to a child or a person that has limitations, it helps them. It provides just that deep pressure, and it can be very calming to your system. It kind of calms down your sensory system or your alerting system to allow you to relax and allow your body to kind of calm down and allow you to be able to move and become more kind of in tune with what your body is. So I think those two properties alone give the kids a freedom when they haven't been able to move against gravity. Gravity can be their worst enemy. And so the water helps them a lot with that.
Well, and I know I've referred several children to you over the years.
Yes.
And I get to follow up on how they're doing. And it really is amazing to hear the differences, because you do reach a point in early intervention, especially where mm-hmm. you're seeing children in their homes. You're a little limited on the equipment that you mm-hmm. have available to use to be able to access you as a resource and see how what you're working on translates back into their home functional skills and how much better they're doing with that.
Right. Well, I like to get Lauren's patience. but what I find is sometimes it's really hard, especially when kids get really smart, on how to pick out those things that they learn how to disguise. So in the water, I'm able to put them in a lot of positions. I can get them on their back. I can get them on their sides. And I can teach them to use muscles that they've learned how to fool all of us into thinking that they were using, when actually they don't even know they have abdominal muscles or hip muscles or back muscles. So it's great that the water, they think it's playtime, but putting me in just regular old positions, no magic, just moving in the water, helps to kind of turn those muscles on to them, and they realize they have those. And it's amazing how easily it transitions from the water to the land. So I always like to spend some time on the land, whether it's just on the pool steps, just so we can let parents see how they can incorporate the water activities into just things you can do at home. So it is, it's amazing. And that's why I do it, because I've had children who they couldn't move at all. They weren't interested. It was too hard. They had given up. And just to see them now, after I've had some children for years, sitting up, trying to take steps, walking. And those are children that maybe would have never gotten the opportunity because they just didn't know how to use the muscles or that they even had them.
As parents, we focus on the day-to-day development and well-being of our children. Minds in Motion can be your partner in struggles with hyperactivity, homework, frequent meltdowns, frustration, and other situations that are keeping your family from thriving. Get to mimlearning.com to read 10 Signs of Struggle and sign up to learn about their four-quadrant program for kids K through 12. Minds in Motion has locations in Louisville, Kentucky, and Carmel, Indiana. If your family is struggling with development of one or more children, contact Minds in Motion and start solving the problems today. MIMLearning.com.
From an OT perspective, I'd say I see quite a few kids that they go through life in a very upright position. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they can really fool some parents and some teachers out there or anybody else involved with them as far as how strong they really are. Mm-hmm. So I can see where getting them in all those different positions in the pool would kind of make that come to light.
Yes, it does. It does. And I think what I love about it is those are sometimes the kids that if you go to the playground, they're hanging out on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just sitting on the ground.
Underneath the playset.
Yes, mm-hmm. underneath the playset. So in the water, we're doing a lot of things to turn on those muscles and doing a lot of, we practice climbing, we practice being on your knees, we practice all of those things. And then we work on those things outside of the water. And it's amazing to turn those children into kids who interact. So there's that piece, and there's also a very social piece of being in the water, too.
Absolutely.
I'd say there's a self-care piece, too.
Oh,
I used to do a little bit of pool therapy many moons ago. so it was always part of the treatment, you know, to work on those self-care skills of maybe taking off your regular clothes, putting on your swimsuit, shoes afterwards, drying off, all those things that kind of go into the pool experience as well.
Yes, I often work on, I'm a team. I work with the OT, I work with the speech therapist. I just try to find out what things are you working on and how can we incorporate that. So we do some blowing bubbles in the water. We do taking things off, taking things on. And then there's an amazing, I think I spoke to it a little bit earlier about how you can, the deep pressure can really calm your system and kind of decrease some of the tactile defensiveness that you kids experience. And it's amazing. The carryover is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the difference. So there's a lot of different types of therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. We're doing social skills because there are always other people in the pool. We work on eye contact and making friends, So I try to incorporate it all.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the parents in the pool with you?
Yes, sometimes. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that isn't. So yes, I try very hard to keep the parents in. But in a lot of instances, the kids sometimes just melt down, unfortunately. So often I'll start without the parent in the water, and then the child and I will build our own relationship. Mm-hmm. And then as they become more able to have the parent closer to them, then we'll bring the parents in. But again, I always try to give them an activity or activities to carry over at home that will make our sessions better and help build on the skills that we're working on in the water. Because, you know, water therapy really isn't anything different. It's physical therapy in the water.
Absolutely. Do you find that the children are able to carry over the skills that the muscles that they're using in the water for several days after they've been in the water? Does that happen over time?
It happens over time. And actually, I would say, if I had to think of a minimal time that I've seen the benefits, where the parents see the benefits or maybe other providers see the benefits, I would say maybe 6 weeks.
Okay.
6 weeks to 8 months, and then we just keep building on it and building on it. A lot of what I hear is that they just seemed more aware that they had this side. Maybe they didn't use it, but they were looking at it, or, you know, and as time comes, they start spontaneously using the side that they decided not to use, or they seem calmer and their bodies are more relaxed. It's easier for me to change their diaper or put on their clothes, or, you know, so it does happen over time.
When I find so many of the kids I work with, trunk rotation is such a big thing. Awesome. I think for all these kids, even typically developing kids, to be able to use trunk rotation for skills, and the pool would be such a nice way to get them to use those muscles without them even realizing that they're working those muscles.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to sneak that in.
Yes.
I would say the majority of the time working on their trunk. So many kids, it's the core. It's where things start. You have to have it. It's all about the core. So we spend a lot of time. We do reaching. You know, you're doing reaching and standing and balance and sit-ups and, you know, just using both sides of your body together. So, the core is key. So we spend a lot of time.
Have you been to some specific courses for aquatic therapy?
I have. Over 15 years. There's a group that I really like, and they usually do a really huge symposium in Florida. It has been some years since I've been there, but that was the major group. It's, I think, the Aquatic Therapy Rehab Institute. They offer awesome classes.
Kara, we need to look into that about mid-February.
Okay.
Florida.
Right.
Yeah.
When time it right.
It's only in the summer.
Oh.
But it is awesome.
Yeah.
And so I do, and I really, I'm always trying to read and see what are some new techniques, what are some things that I could try. But also, once you kind of have the basics of aquatic therapy, it's all about your physical therapy skills and your handling and your developing the relationships. So I find more than the aquatic therapy techniques, I'm probably just using my regular old PT knowledge and skills and handling to get out of the kids what I want to get.
Great.
I know you just said you're using your hands a lot, but are there things that come up kind of again and again? Say a parent has a pool in their backyard, or they're planning to take their child to the pool again after their visit with you. Are there certain go-to pieces of equipment or flotation devices that you go to a lot?
No, I don't really use a lot of floats. I prefer my hands on them. There are some things that I do use. I do have an aquatic therapy exercise belt. Mm-hmm. You probably have seen those. They make those for pediatrics because it allows me still to get my hands on them. So if I'm working with them, the most I'll probably do is maybe put a belt on them, or I'll float one of their extremities. For parents, I usually recommend, especially on vacations, I recommend an old-fashioned float that you could use will support their heads so that their heads don't roll, so their faces stay out of the water, just to make it more enjoyable. It does not have to be therapy in the water to be beneficial. It's just movement. And if I can get a parent just to take them to the pool, just move with them, encourage them to kick their legs. You kick their legs for them. It's a lot of the same benefit. The movement in the water, which is so awesome about it, does not have to be self-initiated all the time. they still receive many of the benefits of the water, just even when someone else is moving them. So just to get in there and move and help them to feel comfortable, and the parents feeling comfortable moving them in the water, because a lot of times parents are afraid to even move them on the land. They're afraid that might hurt them or I might break them. You won't. So the water kind of helps the child relax and the parent relax, and just to interact and have a good time is what I want.
Absolutely. Do you find that there are any specific diagnoses that you see more often of, or really is the pool good for everybody?
I think the pool is great for everybody. It's amazing. You know, it has so many properties that can improve your cardiovascular system, you know, your breathing, your trunk support, your breath support, your muscle relaxation, swelling, pain, edema, I mean, everything. There are so many things that it improves that I don't find that anyone is better than the other. But what I have found is that for those kiddos that have the low muscle tone, a lot of children with Down syndrome, I kind of get them maybe around the two-year-old mark because they're walking, but something still isn't quite right. They still have trouble climbing or, you know, doing those things that require a lot of core strength because they fooled a lot of people, and now mm-hmm. it's hard to get them to move mm-hmm. in the water. It's an awesome way to get it. Kind of when you're like, I don't know what else to do to get them past this point. I can usually get them in the water and really isolate their belly muscles, get them strong, turn them on, let this kid know, hey, I do have these down here. Mm-hmm. I know how to use these now. And then it's amazing the difference. Then they're climbing and jumping and things that all the parents really don't want them to do, but they're glad they're doing anyway.
What a nice self-confidence thing, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking for lifelong skills, mm-hmm. there are so many exercise classes in the water now. Yes. I belong to the local Y, and I think we have cycling in the water. Yes. We have Zumba in the water. There's deep water classes. I know Kara's done some of those. Mm-hmm. So if you can give some of these children the confidence to be in the water and use their bodies, you know, they could carry that on forever.
Mm-hmm. And they often don't, they have no idea of all the different benefits of being in the water and all the properties it has to offer to improve their strength, to improve their endurance, improving their confidence. They have no idea. All it is to them is just playing in the water. Mm-hmm. And you are really, really affecting them in many ways. They're not afraid of water now. So when it's time to transition to maybe swim lessons, that's easy. I've been in the water. I've been in the water before and I feel comfortable there. So if the only thing that you do is make them feel better in the water, then you've accomplished a really big task.
Absolutely.
So, Melody, when you have kids and parents who have worked with you for a while and they've gotten that core strength and worked on some of the functional aspects of mobility that you've been working on, what happens when they graduate out to more community-based swim lessons?
I usually will try to assist the families in finding somewhere where they offer swim lessons that would meet the particular need of the kiddo. I think that we are challenged in Louisville to find swim lessons for persons with special needs. I would love it if somebody else had that resource, but it's been very difficult to find that. So I've tried to connect the families with different individuals or maybe different places that offer swim lessons. But I find that is something that's kind of limited. I do often have children who I've had in aquatherapy who at first had a really difficult time on the land, but they've gotten strong enough and they have the tolerance, and it's time to move on to a more center-based therapy so that they could just take them those steps further. So I do often try to graduate them out, and I usually give them a lot of time because it's hard to get them to get out of the water. The parents become attached because that is an environment where they've seen their child go from maybe doing very little to really excelling and doing a lot, and it's time to move on and push them to that next level.
Well, I think it's hard anyway. I mean, even with our kids, mm-hmm. getting them into swim lessons, it's like individual lessons cost so much, but the group lessons, sometimes the kids are sitting there, you know, through four repetitions of other kids who are going through whatever, working on whatever skill the teacher's working on at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to find a good match.
I agree. I agree.
Do you have any recommendations for families that have children with a lot of sensory processing issues where the acoustics of an indoor pool might be an issue? You know, I'm just thinking about some of the pools I've been to, especially during swim lesson time when is loud.
I was thinking about that when Melody was talking, because a pool is kind of always a challenging sensory environment. So for a lot of these kids, working with you for a while in the pool probably gets them ready to, you know, just go to the pool, any pool where you're not there.
Exactly. Yes, she's not here. We can play. I think that, the benefits of being in the water, the deep pressure, and it's kind of calming down that system. Now, mind you, when I first get many of the children, they are screaming for an hour, but we start to build our relationship and I can get them to relax, and I'm teaching them this is a wonderful place to be. It's very calm. We can be very calm. The pool that I work in is very quiet. There are pluses and minuses to the environment that I'm in, but it is often very helpful to start in a quiet place. So that may mean you're doing therapy at 8 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. And then I often will have a shortened session just to start to build up their tolerance, kind of have whatever control I can have in the water and get them to feel relaxed. And eventually you would be amazed at kids who are so defensive to sound or loud noises or sudden movements, how as their body learns to relax, how they tolerate those things. Because now I can have many kids who I used to see at 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning with no one who can tolerate a swimming pool full of kids. And we're kind of in our own world. And it never phases them, or they want to participate with the other kids.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah, that's even better. Many of my kids like, we do races with some of the kids who are non-disabled that would be in the pool. They love that. I don't have one child that doesn't like to race.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Do you have suggestions for our listeners out there that don't necessarily have a child with special needs, but they want to get their kids in the pool, and some really fun things they can do with them to just help promote overall development?
Let's see. Yes, I do. Really just getting in the water, getting in there with your family, teaching the kids that water really is their friend, and to teach them, of course, about the safety in the water and not to get in with an adult without an adult. But first, even with my children that have been in the water with me for a while, I keep them very close to my body. It's very important to help them to feel comfortable and not to just thrust them into the environment, so you can build their confidence in you and their confidence in the water's ability to support them. So I usually keep them very close to my body, and we spend, you know, those first 15, 30 minutes just close together as they're coming accustomed to the water, and just moving very slowly front to back, side to side, while I'm talking to them and singing to them in a very calm voice, and slowly start to move them away from your body. And then they start to feel a little bit more trust in you and the water. And believe it or not, it can take 2 or 3, 4 sessions of just going to the water and helping the kids to understand that they can trust the water and that there's no danger in it when mom and dad are with you. But the more you get them in, move slowly, let them trust you. Any movement in the water is great. It's a great environment for exercise. And then once they have that trust, I think that's a great time to move to swim lessons. But I think getting into the water the first time with a stranger may not be the best way to get them started. It's nice just to know that mom and dad like the water too. Let's all go in. Make it a family activity, even if you're just sitting on the steps or playing ball or, you know, splashing in the water, kicking the water, just to let them know that this is a really fun thing for us all to do together.
That's almost such an obvious suggestion to keep them close to you, but I don't know that that's what usually happens.
No, you usually don't.
You usually have siblings around, which are creating kind of this unexpected environment, mm-hmm. or a lot of places now have the gradual entry where mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to stay near your child because the water is so shallow at the edges, they kind of wander off from you. But then once they tumble, they do have that moment of mistrust, I think, right, of the water. So,
right. That's a, it's just very, very important. That's something that I do with every child every time I take them in. Even if I've had them in the water for a long time, I just want to introduce them to the water and the temperature change every time. And usually I have them close to me and I'm talking to them. We're going to get in the water now and we're going to walk. We're going to go out to the water. We're going to go a little deeper, but I have you, you're safe. And just to take them out and just give them that confidence, because really, most likely, they're just feeling a little nervous about the change. It's a really big bathtub.
Yeah.
It's a really big bathtub. They don't think that it's just a bathtub. And it's a huge body of water and it can be really intimidating to them.
Yeah, I'm doing swim lessons with our two-year-old right now, and it's a mom and me diaper dip, I think they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is exactly what's happening. I mean, she's excited on the way to the pool, and then we get to the pool, and she has a death grip on me for a good 20 minutes. And then she doesn't want to get out of the pool. She's holding on to the edge, and she's kicking, and the instructor uses those little rubber ducks and kind of flings them into the water so that she wants to go paddle after them and find them. And she kind of forgets about the fact that she's working in the water.
Right. I have a ton of toys, and every child has their favorite activity. So I usually will have their toys on the edge of the water. I'm like, oh, we're going to go work. We'll work for this. You know, just I put their favorite things there on the end, and slowly, and I sometimes it's very slowly, I start with every child close to me, and slowly but surely I can get them out. And by the eighth session, they can come in the water, they're close to me for a couple minutes, and then they're away from me the rest of the time. So, you know, the closer they're into your body, the least amount of work that they're doing. So I very, as much as I can and as quickly as I can, I start to get them away from me so they're really reaping the benefits of what the water has to offer them.
Have you found that insurance companies are willing to pay for what you do? Do you just code it as regular therapy services and you're just using the pool? I know in early intervention they've gone back and forth on whether they like it or not.
They continue to go back and forth. However, I've had some good success with it, and I still code it as aquatherapy for most insurances. It depends. They go up and down. But I often can send my documentation and they see what we're working on is our land-based activities and aquatic therapy-based activities. So what I typically do is, like if I'm documenting it, I'll say, this is what we did on land. This is what we did in the water. So it's been not bad over the past 15 years, but they go up and down.
Yeah, I just think that it's such a nice tool for parents to have and to not have to worry about the financial piece of it. Mm-hmm. To know that their insurance coverage is going to cover it would be so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is the deciding factor if a parent is on the fence between, you know, they know that their child needs something. They would maybe like to think about aquatherapy, but they're also kind of wavering. Maybe we just go get some swim lessons. What's the deciding factor there for them?
I would say maybe the goals that you're trying to achieve. If you're looking just to learn how to swim, swimming is where you want to go. I always say that I don't teach them how to swim. I'm teaching them how to be aware of their body. We're trying to gain strength. We're trying to gain mobility and independence and the ability to play, decrease their pain, improve the function of their body. That is the goal of physical therapy, and that is my goal. If I have a child that is ready for swim lessons, I want them to go to swim lessons, because there are plenty of children that can benefit from aquatic therapy. They're very different. It doesn't always look different at times, but there's a lot of difference. So if your child needs the specialized care and continuous evaluation from a physical therapist to adapt those skills and the activities to meet their goals and to meet their needs, then I most definitely would say aquatic therapy. And there's really no comparison between the two. There's just really no comparison. When you need a PT or an OT, you need those skilled, knowledgeable persons to provide those services to get your baby ready to go for swim lessons. And I don't know a physical therapist that doesn't love the time when it's time to discharge the child to do more activities with students or kiddos who aren't disabled. We all want that. We miss them a lot. But that's our goal.
The goal is always graduation.
The goal is always graduation. It's always graduation. It's a happy day.
It's the Minds in Motion Name That Vestibular Apparatus Show.
Okay, so we are now at the part of the podcast that Melody did not know about. This is the game show segment. It is called Name That Vestibular Apparatus.
You're always working that vestibular system in always. The pool, aren't you?
Yes. Always. So what we're going to do is ask Melody a question. She's going to take a very educated guess. But to find out the answer, you're going to have to go to our Facebook page when we release the podcast and see if she was correct.
I'm nervous.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Dig back in your PT education here.
Okay, so we're talking about the vestibular system, which is the movement system. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to talk about semicircular canals today.
Okay, remember those?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
so far
see
so
how
good.
Much I remember.
Okay, so this canal detects rotation of the head around an anterior-posterior axis. For example, when you move to touch your head to your shoulders or do a cartwheel. Kara is demonstrating in the studio right now.
They can't see that.
They
you
can't see it.
To tell.
It was good. It is the longest of the three canals. And it is part of the bony labyrinth.
You know, we discussed that most likely when someone is swimming, this canal would be activated when they rotate their head to take a breath.
Oh, we did talk about that before she got here. So, yes, when someone is swimming and they turn their head.
Or if they're doing aqua therapy and they have their face in the water and they turn to breathe.
Okay, so, Melody, is it A, the anterior semicircular canal, B, the posterior semicircular canal, or C, the lateral semicircular canal?
Oh, my.
Cue the game show music. She's thinking. Do you have a guess?
I'll just do my cartwheel visual cues
okay.
again for Melody.
Okay,
helps.
Well, I'm going to guess that it's lateral.
Okay, so that is Melody's guess. Now, to find out if she was correct, you're going to have to go to our Facebook page when the podcast is released and see if she was correct.
Melody, we ask everybody one last question.
Oh, wow. I hope it's easier than the last one.
I think it should be pretty easy
okay.
for you.
Yes.
What gives you your courage to do what you do every day?
Oh, wow. My kids. They do. They work so hard to do their absolute very best. And to see one of them lift their head, hold their head up, move a finger, activate a switch, just really, it gives me life. Every day. I cannot imagine anything else that I would ever do. So I don't think that I'm very courageous. I think my kids are and their families. So they make me do what I do every day. I can't imagine doing anything else.
Great. I want to hear about those waterproof switches too.
Yes. They're on the side of the pool.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much for being here. This has been great.
Thank you for having me. Say what you want to say.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only and should not be construed as therapeutic or medical advice, as your particular situation will vary. If you have concerns, please contact your local healthcare professional. For more information and additional episodes, visit Kara and Lauren online at developingcourage.com. And thanks for listening.